This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
It brought back!
You have a brother in the 2nd Battalion?
Yes, sir.
They're walking into a trap. Your orders are to deliver a message calling off tomorrow morning's attack. If you don't, it will be a massacre.
Come on!
There is only one way this ends. Last man standing.
Hello, you are listening to Popcorn Culture. I don't know how to come in from that clip. That was a very serious clip. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lee Chui Lin, Sharmila Ganesan, and Arvind Yuvaraj, a show where we take you through movies with a side serving of pop culture, sometimes the other way around. It really depends. But today, we are going to be reviewing 1917, which is the latest film that was directed, co-written, and produced by Sam Mendes. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much of the story we need to give, considering the trailer that we just played kind of tells
pretty,
you
pretty
most of
summed
it.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
I guess it's the simplest thing would be it's set during World War I. It's sort of a quest by two soldiers who are sent on a mission with a message to save a whole platoon of soldiers. And they're on the clock.
And they have to cross enemy lines.
And mm-hmm. one of the soldiers is actually the brother of one of the boys being sent with the message.
Yep.
And the two soldiers are played by George Mackay and Dean Charles Chapman, who you may or may not recognize. I spent the whole movie thinking, who is that? I know him. And then suddenly at the end, I'm like, Tommen. So
he is Tommen.
Guys,
I'm
so pleased that I get to do this to someone else.
Because
literally realizing this right now.
Yeah.
George Mackay I recognize from Captain Fantastic, and I loved him there. But
that's his face.
Sorry, guys. Okay. Having a small moment. mm-hmm. But yeah, so and I bring that up because the film in many ways is dependent on these two, because for large parts of the movie you're really stuck with one or both of them, like mm-hmm. And you have to kind of be in their company, because of course the other thing about this film is that it is posited as a single shot, right? Like it is a one it's like Birdman.
It's supposed to feel like it's all one long continuous take.
Yes.
Quite amazingly so, if I may say so, because there are times when you're just like, how is this happening? How are they doing this?
Mm, mm, mm.
Yeah, and the whole premise of this is that it's supposed to feel like a real-time war, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's what the filmmakers have said, that the aim here is for you to experience sort of the dullness, the day-to-day, the waiting associated with World War One in particular, because World War One was, of course, a war of attrition, right? It was mm-hmm. a war of the trenches. And so the idea here was that it was supposed to give you that. I also think it's just a bit of showing off, like, quite frankly.
Yeah,
it's a lot of showing off.
When
there's
a director
so much
chooses
off.
To do a long take, I mean, whether it's Birdman or 1917, it's obviously like, here are my cinematic chops.
And,
but it worked. For me, it worked.
How much did it work?
The long takes in particular?
Yeah, no, I mean the movie as a whole.
Okay, so I know we're going to get into this later. I really loved the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the long takes in particular, as Lynn just said, worked for me really well, because I feel like I'm walking next to them, you know?
Mm.
Like when the camera's behind them, I feel like I'm walking behind them. And it's, for me, it worked really well. So this was a case of, yes, it was show-offy. Yes, it was sort of virtuoso filmmaking, but with a really good reason, not done for just showing off.
For me, having that awareness of the technical aspects of the film, like knowing it's going to be like a long take, I think it took away from my appreciation of the story. I think it took away from my focus on the plot or the people. Like throughout the movie, because I knew this was going to happen, I was watching the camera, like I was looking at how are they going to cut, like where is it going to be? Can I spot where the CGI is or where they're going to block? Just the nerdy production person that's in me. And I couldn't pay a lot of attention to what was actually happening.
Interesting.
So it's either that, or I found that the plot wasn't captivating enough that I was paying more attention to all the technical aspects and all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes.
Mm.
I have no idea which one it is.
Right. Okay. So I think I'm leaning more towards, yeah, you know, I'm inside
know
of the room.
I know I'm in the minority in this room.
No, but with that said, so this movie worked for me on some levels. Mm. There were times where I found myself tearing up, not necessarily because of the story, but because of the sheer spectacle. And, you know, honestly, if I'm going to be paying money to go watch this in Onyx, which I did, mm-hmm. And I do think that it's worth going to watch in a good screen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know yes. all cinema screens are great, but actually, no, I do not know that. That's not true. So, I think that if you are pondering whether or not this is worth visually kind of splurging
so
a little
VPN
bit.
Don't VPN and watch it on your laptop is what you're saying.
Like, I am saying yes. that. I think that some movies need to be seen on the big screen. This is one of those. So in terms of sheer spectacle, there were moments where I just found tears in my eyes and I couldn't stop it. And my heart was pounding. And my fists were clenched, and it was just, ooh. And then at other times, I thought, do soldiers talk like this? So my main issue with it, I got lost in the one shot. I didn't mind it. I wasn't after the first 10 minutes. I was no longer counting the takes and stuff. But I thought, I don't know if people talk to each other like this. And I have noticed that Sam Mendes doesn't write a lot of his films. They are often written by others. This is, I think, the first time, in fact, that he's... It might be the first time that he has actually co-written. And that's, of course, because the story is based on stories that his grandfather told him. So it's a very personal connection. I get all that. I just don't think the script is very good.
See, for me, it's interesting, right? I kind of felt like this is... This is almost like a wishful way of like, I hope this is how they talk. I hope this is how these men relate to each other. Because otherwise, how awful would it be to be stuck in the situation and not have that friend with whom you can have this moment with, you know?
Yeah.
And particularly because we don't get, with war movies, right? Like I'm sort of strongly pacifist and I'm very strongly anti-war, but I'm also terribly, terribly in awe of the people who give their lives for us in that cause. Mm-hmm. And those things are always separate for me. And this movie is one of those movies that managed to capture that sheer humanness of that story because of the two actors that are playing the leads. I felt like they felt like boys. They felt like boys talking to each other, lost, a little bit scared, and really out of their depth.
See, I didn't get that at all. I think now when you're talking about dialogue, I'm thinking about the dialogue, and then I can't remember anything anyone said, which I don't know if it's that's a good thing or like a bad thing. But I didn't get the human element of the story. I'm not saying it's not a good story. It's a good movie, but. I didn't get to connect with the people in the movie. Like, I didn't understand the nuance. I didn't understand what anyone wanted. I didn't understand what anyone was fighting for. I didn't get the context. So all I knew was two people were supposed to go across enemy lines and get this message to save 1,600 people and one of these characters' brothers. That's all. For me, that wasn't enough to get me hooked onto the people. I don't know if that's because of dialogue or not, but it's also because there was so much cinematic stuff happening that it took away from the people who are on screen.
You know what's the strange thing here? The strange thing is that I don't think any of us are arguing about whether or not this was a good film. It's a good film.
It is such a good film.
Yes, but I think we're talking about whether or not we enjoyed it or whether or not we really liked it. And and also, I think how much it will live on with us. Because another thing that the filmmakers, I think, were aiming to do is to ensure that World War One is not a forgotten war. That's because, of course, it's been so many years. It's been more than 100 years now. There are no living survivors of that war. And because of that, there is this very real fear that this war that was a slower war compared to World War Two, where... everybody knows Nazis. You see the uniform, you understand where you are, you get what's going
on. There's so much drama.
This is a little harder. The uniforms don't look that great. You know,
Most of it was waiting.
Correct. Yeah. So from a cinematic point of view, World War One is not necessarily the most exciting war. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, I think you had very ordinary characters doing very ordinary things. There was nothing particularly special about them. So all this stuff about motivation, there was no showiness in the performances. It's not a showy thing. And I appreciated that, but I don't know if, like you, whether it got in the way of my of its stickability in my head, you know, of it really kind of landing. But yeah, I mean, so 1917 is going to be in general release in just a couple of days on the 16th of January. Are you planning to watch it? Have you seen it already? What did you think? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. And you can also write to us at movies@bfm.my.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
You keep hold of me! We need to keep moving! Come on! I can't see! I can't see!
BFM 89.9, you are listening today to Popcorn Culture, a movie show with a side serving of pop culture, sometimes the other way around. Today, we are reviewing Sam Mendes's 1917, which is, like we established earlier, shot to look like one long continuous take. Mm-hmm. It is a quest movie. There are two young soldiers who need to get to a place that they've been told
To deliver a message so that they can save 1,600 soldiers.
Yes, but they've also been told that their journey is going to be quite straightforward, and it isn't.
Right, and it takes them through enemy front lines.
Yes.
You know, the thing that struck me as we were talking before the break, the way you guys sound about this movie is exactly how I felt when I watched Dunkirk. And I feel like it's a fair and interesting comparison, because that movie too was about a very self-contained aspect of a particular war, and maybe the difference is that that had a sort of an ensemble cast, whereas this one is much more focused on the story of two people in particular. But I felt the way you guys seem to feel about this one, which is the whole, yeah, I can see the brilliance of this film, I'm on board that this is a great experience to have, but I was left not really remembering much and really not connecting to anyone at all. And this almost feels like the movie like 1917 feels like the movie I wanted Dunkirk to be.
It's an interesting comparison, in part because I think as 1917 plays with the one long take thing, Dunkirk of course plays with the concept of time. Yes. So in each there's kind of a, I wouldn't say a gimmick, but there's a particular way in which the story is being told.
Mm-hmm. I think if you took the story of Dunkirk and then you put it with the pacing and the way 1917 was shot, you'd get like the perfect movie. Like story plus just like someone showing off about how he can make movies and like his filmmaking prowess or whatever. But from like a technical standpoint, 1917 is far ahead of so many things that have come out in maybe the last 5 years. I think if you want to look at someone who's like a master at his work, just working on his craft, this is it. If there was, like, if you are someone who doesn't go to the cinema anymore and you wanted to pick like one movie this year to spend your money on, it should be 1917.
We're only in January, Arvind.
No, but I don't think anything other than Tenet, I don't think any again, Nolan, I don't think anything is going to come out that's going to compare to 1917 in terms of like, you know, just a cinematic movie. Like the reason IMAX and big screens were made for, like, this is it. But that being said, yeah, like I connected with the story of Dunkirk more than 1917. I think I connected with a lot of other war movies more than 1917. Like, we've seen this happen, this concept of like a small battalion or like maybe two or three people who have to go across enemy lines, like Saving Private Ryan, Dunkirk again, and all these other war movies, I think, did it better story-wise. Mm. Technical-wise, like, bar none, this is so, so far ahead.
So I was thinking about, so firstly, I love Dunkirk. And Dunkirk was a pleasant surprise for me because I was a little bit cool on Christopher Nolan at that point in time. I was a bit, you know, post Interstellar, which I really just could not. And post The Dark Knight. I was just like, you know what, dude? You know what? it's fine. So I went into Dunkirk a little bit reluctant. And I loved it. I loved every inch of it. And it reminded me of why, despite the fact that, like you, Sharmila, I don't believe in war, why war movies and war stories are one of the great wells of storytelling from which we draw, because they're just high drama. They have brotherhood. They have, if you like that sort of thing, nationalism. They have just all these different layers, right? And Dunkirk in that sense really worked for me. It was beautiful to look at. I really enjoyed the storytelling conceit of it being different times, and you encountering people at different points. And it sticks with me. Even now when I think about that scene with a stretcher on the beach and two men who are really just boys running, I get chills. I have that same experience with 1917, but I know it's not touching me emotionally. And I think that's what I want. I crave that sort of catharsis. Mm. And at the end of 1917, I just felt, oh, okay, that was amazing. But,
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like I wanted to cry, like at the movies. Like I wanted to be there and like feel like I was emotionally wrecked. Like this movie sort of like attacked me in a way that I didn't want to be attacked. But after coming out, I felt like it was money well spent. Like I wouldn't, you know, every cent, I would even pay more to see this movie. But emotionally, I was at the same place that I was before going into the movie.
So I cried buckets. Like I cried like practically from within the first hour onwards. Like something would happen and it would keep me in tears throughout until the last frame. But also it strikes me that one of the things that is really different in terms of how Sam Mendes tells the story versus Nolan would be that Nolan is not a small moments kind of guy. He does the stretcher on the beach, the sucker punch in the gut very well. For me, the things that stood out about 1917 are those really small moments. The boy finding a cow, one of the boys finding a cow in a pail of milk, and, you know, the focus as he scoops out the milk to drink, you know. Or, you know, there's this scene where the truck gets, a truck full of soldiers gets stuck in the mud, and how a huge group of them kind of get out and they understand the urgency and so help them sort of lift the truck up.
Yeah.
These small moments, which are very normal and everyday, but played on a screen like that. And because of that long take, you also feel the urgency of each of these moments and how every scene earns its place in the time that it has because it's his journey or it's their journey towards the end point. I don't know. For me, like all of those had a lot of weight, which I think in a Nolan film would slip by because there's a bigger scene that's coming up. If that makes sense.
I'm always happy when I hear people enjoying good films. And so listening to you talk about it, I'm really glad you had that experience. But when I think about the scenes that you're describing, not all of them, but some, I thought they were contrived. That's how I felt. I was just like, you're trying to play me here like a fiddle and I am not going to be played, sir. I will not. You know? So the moments that worked, the moments where I was bowled over, I don't know, maybe I'm a big moments kind of girl with war. I didn't think so, but who knows? Mm. Maybe this is the moment where I realized that. I think because ultimately it comes back to the problems I had with the script. So there were times where I was just like, I don't believe this. And because I don't believe it, I'm having a problem really immersing myself in it. So ultimately, all of which to say, go watch the movie. I don't think any of us are saying not to watch
it. No, I think it's definitely worth watching.
Even the music, like Thomas Newman, I think, was the guy who scored the film. I mean, like, amazing music. Yeah. And I think that's one of the biggest differences between Sam... We've been making this comparison with Nolan so many times, but one of the biggest differences between Sam Mendes and Nolan is that Nolan always goes for the big Hans Zimmer style of music. Sam Mendes picks, I wouldn't say more appropriate, but smaller, more intimate, more human sort of soundtracks for his film. So even the score by Thomas Newman is really good. The stuff by Roger Deakins, who's the cinematographer, his work is different. I think this film will stand apart from all his other films because it sort of shot like a video game, like a long take video game. As opposed to the stuff that he normally does, which is like he's not there to beautify the shot. He's there to help Sam Mendes understand how cameras work and where he should place it. So even in that sense, Roger Deakins, I think, was challenged by this movie. So on like all accounts, go see it and then decide if you like it or you don't like it or you're more like, you know, in awe because of the production.
Can I just say two things, two sort of tangentially related things to this? Firstly, if you are interested in World War One, a couple of things. There is an Instagram account called Dr. Lindsay Fitzharris, and it is the story of it's the account that's run by a medical historian who there was a point before this, when she was researching her first book, when she talked a lot about Victorian surgeries, which if you're squeamish, maybe not for you, but it's really interesting to see how surgery was practiced back in the day. And her most recent interest, and so if you go to, that's Dr. Lindsay Fitzharris on Instagram, there are a lot of photos of soldiers from World War One and the injuries that they faced. The fact that people's noses and jaws and whatever were literally ripped off and they were living. And it's really kind of a look at the first mechanized war, right? Because this is the war that changed that. And how injuries, they couldn't account for things like shrapnel. They couldn't account for these, and how plastic surgeons had to really patch people's faces together. I couldn't stop thinking about it while watching 1917.
This movie actually makes no bones about that fact. Like, you see full on the kind of devastating injuries that the soldiers encounter, and how you know, the fact that they're using these weapons in a space and where they're not equipped to deal with the kind of injuries that they come back with. And you see that in this film as well.
Did you want to see more of that? Like, I wanted to see, I don't want to say I wanted to see, but it would have helped if I saw more of that.
For me, it felt like it was just nice is a bad word. It felt like it was just right. Enough to sort of make me feel it without feeling like it was torture porn.
Because there are some very visceral things. Yes. You know, somebody puts a hand through a body.
You know, or you have this like long take through a soldier camp, a medical camp, where you see flesh and bone and faces, you know, with massive cuts. And for me, that was really difficult. That was a really difficult scene for me.
The second thing I just wanted to throw in is, have either of you watched Blackadder?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, and so this movie again reminded me of Blackadder Season 4, which I think is a really poignant look at soldiers waiting. Soldiers waiting to be told what to do. Soldiers waiting in the trenches. Soldiers holding the line but not knowing why. And that's actually, I know it's a sitcom, but that's a theme that runs through this movie as well, where they look at the land that they fought for and they go, what? And even as these two boys kind of traverse this space, you're like, this is it? This is the front line? This is what's going on, and I thought that was kind of beautiful.
Which is so weird, because in the previous episode we spoke about how Sam Mendes watched a lot of comedy, like growing up, including Blackadder. So you know, it sort of plays into the way he makes his movies. They're not funny. They're not funny by design. But if you look at the influences and the kind of like the subtle humor that he puts in his movies, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, I didn't think about the Blackadder comp, but it makes a lot of sense that you felt it was like Blackadder.
So we've been talking about 1917, which is going to be out in just a couple of days on the 16th. Have you seen it yet? Are you planning to watch it? Do let us know. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my. And if you just can't get enough popcorn culture, you can find us at BFM Popcorn. We are on Instagram. We are on Twitter. We'll see you back here tomorrow for our Supercuts episode. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.